you about a program implementation, the successful integration of a rapid HIV screening program in an urban family planning OBGYN clinic. So the program background, as was just told in the introduction, the Partnership Comprehensive Care Practice is the largest comprehensive adult HIV care clinic in the Philadelphia area, serving about 1,500 patients per year. And the Women's Care Center is an OBGYN family planning clinic, which serves about 8,000 patients per year. Both of these clinics are located in Center City, Philadelphia. They're actually located in the same building, and they're both operated by Drexel University College of Medicine. So a little bit of the background. As most of you probably know, heterosexual HIV transmission now accounts for 80% of new infections in women in the United States. So the latest CDC guidelines state that it's critical that family planning and OBGYN clinics offer HIV screening as part of routine care. Family planning clinic staff needs training and streamlined consent counseling model to successfully integrate routine HIV screening into their services. And this program was initiated in 2003 when the partnership received grant funding to place a dedicated HIV counselor in the Women's Care Center full-time to provide rapid HIV testing to their OBGYN and family planning patients as well as their patients' partners, and we also opened it up to walk-ins from the public. The objectives for starting HIV testing program in this setting were to identify new HIV-positive individuals and get them into care, to reduce the possibility of mother-to-child HIV transmission, to prevent possible HIV infections through safer sex and risk reduction counseling with the patients, and to then prevent secondary transmission for any patients who would be identified as HIV positive. In the Women's Care Center, HIV testing has now been presented as a standard of care for all prenatal patients in the first trimester, and in the last year or two, we've been repeating the HIV test in the third trimester, and we did a small study on that that showed 95% of the patients accepted a repeat HIV test in their third trimester. And testing was also offered to family planning and the GYN patients by the dedicated HIV counselor. Usually she went out to the waiting room and offered the test there, but referrals could also be made by clinicians for any patients that they thought might be at risk. In April of 2007, the testing responsibilities transitioned from that dedicated HIV counselor to the in-house medical assistants of the clinic, with the new goal of all patients being offered voluntary HIV testing regardless of any risk, and informing them that it's part of the clinic's standard of care for all patients. So a little bit of background before the transition. From 2003 to 2007, the full-time HIV counselor performed a total of 2,533 HIV tests. The average age was 28. About 9% of those tested were men, and they were mostly partners of the patients along with some of the walk-ins. 39% of those tested were pregnant, and 13 pregnant HIV-positive women were identified, and mother-to-child transmission was averted in all those cases. The seropositivity of all the tests was about 1.5, but there was a much higher rate for the walk-in, 7.5% versus about 0.5% for just the clinic's patients. So after the transition, the responsibility for routine HIV screening of all patients was transferred to the in-house clinic staff, primarily performed by the medical assistants of the clinic. It's now offered to all patients during triage. It's performed by the medical assistants in triage. The results are recorded in a logbook in the lab, and the results are provided by physicians and NPs. So since the transition, which again has only been a few months, there have been 693 rapid HIV tests performed by the clinic staff, which after accounting for about a two-week of startup period, an average of 121 tests per month, which doubled the monthly average test when we only had one HIV counselor doing it all. Now that it's integrated, we're obviously testing a greater percentage of the patients. We've had four positive results. Two of them were prenatal patients, and two were family planning patients. The seropositivity has remained about the same so far. The acceptance rate has increased, however. Before the transition, we had a 76% acceptance rate, and after the transition, we're seeing an 89% acceptance rate. So just to summarize some of the things that changed, actually a lot changed during the transition. From who offers the test, it used to be offered mainly by the HIV counselor or recommended by the clinician. Now it's offered by the in-house medical assistants. It used to be offered either in the waiting room or the patient exam room, and now it's offered in our triage room. There used to be a long consent that was specific just to HIV and took up an entire page. Now there's a shorter, streamlined consent with HIV information integrated into the general clinic consent. The HIV counselor used to perform all the tests herself, and now we have the medical assistants performing the test. There used to be a counseling model of the 20 to 30 minutes for the test to process. The patient would get one-on-one risk reduction counseling, which obviously didn't allow to test as many people. And now we have more streamlined counseling, pre-test counseling averaging 3 to 5 minutes, and then post-test counseling would be more intensive if the person ended up being positive. The testing location used to be done in a private office, one-on-one, and now it's done in the triage room and then processed in the clinic lab. And then the results used to be given just by the HIV counselor. Now the results are given by the clinicians, which would be either a doctor or an NP. So part of the transition process included months of planning with the clinic director and other key staff. We provided 3 in-service trainings to provide information on HIV testing to the clinic staff, and the director actually asked all of the staff to come, including the receptionists and the lab folks, pretty much everyone in the clinic. We provided timers, a logbook, and written protocols for the lab. We identified key staff and tasked them with overseeing aspects of the new process. We allowed our HIV counselor to shadow the MAs throughout the transition, and we received assistance for this program through our local family planning council and our local AIDS educational training center. So part of the way we tried to normalize HIV testing in this center was distributing HIV testing information to all the patients, displaying posters at eye level around the clinic, displaying the testing kits in the lab or exam rooms, and using language to normalize the testing, such as, we offer HIV testing to all of our patients. Some say here in the Women's Care Center, HIV testing is part of our total care package. And this is the current patient flow. The patient is given HIV education materials and offered an HIV test while they're in the triage room, and the patient signs an HIV consent, which is required in our state, and I'll get into that a little bit later. If the patient accepts the test, we use an oral swab or a quick test, which is performed by a medical assistant in the triage room, and then the test kit is brought to the lab. The patient then enters an exam room, and when the test is finished processing in the lab, the result is recorded in a logbook and also in the patient's medical chart, and then the medical assistant informs the patient's clinician of the result. And then the results are given to the patient in her private exam room by a clinician, who can then also provide risk reduction counseling. So Pennsylvania is one of the, I think, 12 states that explicitly requires written consent for HIV testing. So this is called Pennsylvania Act 148. It requires that no HIV-related test can be performed without written consent of the subject. All tests require pre-test counseling. No test can be determined or reported positive without a confirmatory test, and no test results, even negative, can be revealed without immediate face-to-face counseling. So I just took some photos of things that are used in the clinic as examples. This actually is a poster that's located in the triage room right next to the chair where the patients sit at eye level. So while they're getting their blood pressure taken, they can read this. And I just love the way it was written. Ask anyone here about the rapid test, the medical assistant, the person in the lab, the nutritionist, the social worker, the family planning counselor, your doctor or nurse practitioner. It's important to your health to be tested yearly. So that really shows that if any point during your visit you want to ask about the test or you want to follow up, you can pretty much ask everyone, that everyone has the information and is trained and can get you the test. This is a photo of our lab. As I'm sure many clinic labs, it's very crowded, and we didn't really have room at first to put the test, so they came up with the idea of screwing these holders into the wall. And if you can see, those black things are timers, so that they set the timer for each test, and when it goes off, the result is immediately recorded in the logbook, which is right underneath it, and this allows more than one test to be processed at once. There is a full-time medical assistant in the lab at all times, and sometimes there's a second person dealing with patients, so this kind of helps normalize it. This is some of our patient information. I think we actually have this in brochure form, but this is the text we came up with. It just is written at a sixth grade level and goes over basic information. about HIV and health transmitted and information like that. This is a slip that they created to put in the medical charts, which we think is very helpful. It says, was the test offered, yes or no? Was it accepted or declined? And if it was declined, what was the reason? And then were the results given? This has two slips, and they put one in the chart, and then they tear off the yellow sheet and give it to data collection so that we can start recording, you know, the number of tests accepted and the reasons for refusal. This is an example of the logbook. I just grayed out the patient name and information, but there's not too much information taken. The date, the patient's identity sticker, whether they were a family planning, OB, or GYN patient, and the signature of the person starting the test, the result, and then who read the result. So not too much information. It can be filled up pretty quickly. And then this is a clinical manual that we devised during our months of planning, which, as you can see, has a lot of information, but it's great to have everything in one place so that new staff, or if you need to retrain staff, everything is kind of here. As you can see, as an example of consent form, the HIV testing information, some talking points, the OraQuick protocol, lab protocol, a results form if you need to make new copies, how to handle a preliminary positive test result, and contact information for HIV test staff and beepers and that kind of information. So I did a quick little video of our medical assistants giving the HIV test, and this is actually unscripted. I just asked someone to, how do you offer the test, and they did it for me. I did a tiny bit of editing just because there was a little stumbling, but hopefully. I didn't prompt that even. So I did a survey of the staff who were in the clinic during the transition just to get some of their feedback and to offer some tips they offered. Nine clinic staff completed the survey, which was about 70% of all the staff, including the medical director. And 100% viewed offering routine HIV screening to all patients as very important, and that really stood out for me. I think it's important to get the staff buy-in. And I actually kind of saw that occur during our in-service trainings. We kept, you know, kind of saying that you, each of you in this clinic is important in helping to possibly prevent future HIV transmissions, and we explained that especially for pregnant women, if they're tested while they're pregnant, we can prevent the baby from being infected. And I saw lights go off and saying, wow, really, like, we can actually prevent babies from getting HIV. They really felt invested in that and really kind of took it on as their own and realized it was important. 78% rated the integration of HIV testing as very or somewhat successful. Most of them rated it very successful. And 58% reported that they had already performed HIV testing in the clinic. So we have a pretty good number who are getting familiar with doing the HIV testing. And what helped the transition? Well, 100% said that support from the HIV counselors and the HIV staff was the most helpful. And in addition to referring to the written protocols that we had made, having support of the clinic director and providing the in-service training. So they really, really liked the support of our HIV counselor, both the one who was dedicated in-house, kind of shadowing them and helping them, and support from the rest of us who checking in and having meetings and doing the in-service trainings and being able to call us if they had any questions or we could run up if they had any problems. So we would recommend if you're a standalone clinic who doesn't have the, you know, the HIV clinic in the same building as we do, solicit assistance from your referral HIV site. Where are you going to refer these patients to if they are identified positive? Get some assistance from that HIV site. Allow shadowing. Ask them to observe your staff until your staff feel confident either offering the test or giving the results, and arrange for the referral clinic to be on call for continued support, especially when you get positive results. Some of the major challenges and some potential solutions we came up with during the transition were having a lack of time to do the consent and perform the testing. The clinic director integrated HIV consent testing process into the standard forms and the triage protocol, and the lab system, as I showed you, was set up to handle multiple patient tests at once. But this is still the biggest challenge. We also had a fear of giving positive results, and so in this site we decided the medical assistants would perform the test, but they don't give the results. Those are given by the doctors and residents who have also had many grand rounds and in-service trainings and support from some of our psychiatry staff on how to give positive results. The cost of the HIV test kits continues to be a problem as well. Initially, they were provided free through funding from the CDC. We're now in the process of billing insurance and Medicaid for the test kits, and we also get reimbursement from our local family planning council for the test and the counseling. Maintaining confidentiality in small crowded clinic space was an issue. The testing is done in an open lab so that the patients can see that it's normalized and routine, but the individual risk counseling and the results are only given in the private exam rooms with the closed doors. This is a little bit of information about the Medicaid reimbursement. I just got this off the CDC website, so if people are looking for codes, the information was there. And this is just some tips from some of the staff. Have proper training before you start. Have a clear system on how to offer the test and where it's performed. Make sure the testing area is well lit because sometimes the lines of a positive are faint. Have a simple logbook accessible to the testers, but don't ask too many questions because that would slow them down too much. Having an experienced HIV counselor on site, especially in the beginning, really makes everyone feel more comfortable, and have resources on site so patients can get the proper referrals. And also have a support staff to help staff deal with positive results. You also have to take care of the emotional needs of the staff. Our family planning counselor said, maintain a normal approach to testing and offer it as part of the total care package, which I think was the language used in the video. Be sensitive to your client's fears and concerns, maintain appropriate educational materials, and communicate any concerns to the team leader in a timely fashion as they happen. Our medical director had these tips. Understand that it really is extra work for the staff. Reinforce the importance of testing, but be flexible. For instance, let the medical assistants know that if it's a super busy day or they're short-staffed, they can decrease the testing occasionally. And prepare, develop written materials such as talking points and workflows. Perform practice runs, discuss follow-up procedures when glitches occur. Have a champion point person. She designated one medical assistant sort of be the most well-trained and to keep everything together, and plan ongoing meetings to follow up so you can deal with problems. So this is just a summary. I probably went over these already. And I just want to acknowledge my co-authors, Amy Hilly and Erica Aaron, who are in the audience here, the staff and management of the Women's Care Center and the partnership, my actors who were also HIV testers, Beverly Stewart and Anita Vargas, and support for this program was provided by the ETC, the Family Planning Council, AIDS Activities Coordinating Office, and Gilead Sciences. And this is my contact information. I kind of quickly went through those snapshots of forms and stuff, but if anyone wanted examples, you can email me and I'd be happy to share them. Thank you.
Thank you, Shannon. One of the objectives of the Management Sustainability Task Force is to share experiences between U.S. programs and international programs, which was one of the reasons we wanted to get at least one presentation from the U.S., and I think we can see that there are things that we can learn from each other. So now I'd like to open it up for questions.
Cost information was not collected. I agree with you that it is critical, and that's a very important piece of information for decision makers. But cost effectiveness analyses of various screening programs have been done, and the approach I presented, which is the single visit approach using VIA and cryotherapy, is the most cost effective approach. And in fact, the study was done in 5 countries under the Alliance for Cervical Cancer Prevention funded by the AIDS Foundation. But they show that providing screening is actually cost less than doing nothing.
For our programs, it's still the same dilemma. I mean, if it costs too much at the beginning, I mean, that's what, I mean, if you're, if if you're aiming at a quality service and more money needs to be put into it and more savings will be done later, that's what we have to do. But I mean, looking at just initiating it, the cost of initiating it might look like, I mean, if you're going to say how many visits before the clinic was given and how many visits the clinics later on was given to the public, and take this as an indicator for how effectiveness and efficiency is, yes, this would be, measured against the cost that was put in this particular clinic. But when you go to other clinics, the major cost will be thinner, far thinner, because the system is now working and it's keeping itself and keeping its momentum. So at the end, it will be, cost effective. There is nothing, up till now that is started independently on it, but this is one of the major things that we'll be working on towards the second part of the project where we have enough data on our hands.
I think the question was, is it part of the essential reproductive health package? Was that the question? As far as I know, there isn't an essential reproductive health package. There is an essential primary care health package, and it's not a part of that package, but the service is provided for free. Has been around since about the 1940s, 1950s, and the decline we've seen in cervical cancer incidence and mortality in the developed world has been much due to Pap smear, but unfortunately the same results haven't been seen in the developing world for a number of reasons. Because as simple as it may seem to us here, it's actually logistically quite complex and requires laboratories, it requires multiple visits from women who we know have very poor access to services. So BIA was studied as an approach that would allow women to receive results on the same day of their test. So BIA is visualizing the cervix after applying vinegar. And then based on those results, a referral can be made or treatment can actually be offered in the same visit. So one of the really the key features is to reduce lost follow-up, which is one of the things that makes Pap smear very difficult to implement.
Transition, but we kind of based it on the CDC guidelines that said you should take the time mainly for post-test counseling for positives and that you don't need to spend that much time on pre-test counseling, and in fact it would be a barrier to implement routine testing in medical settings if you needed to spend 20 minutes with every patient, when in most areas or most settings probably 99% of the people tested are going to be HIV negative, so that the counseling should come on the back end. That actually, I feel like the biggest transition was actually for our HIV testers,
who really felt like that was necessary, and we kind of listened to them and said, well, what are the most important things that you think that we need to keep and that we need to, information we need to give? And part of that, we replaced the one-on-one counseling with written information that we tried to write at a sixth grade reading level and make pretty clear so that they didn't have to waste their counseling time talking about what is HIV and how is it transmitted, but hopefully the patient could read that. And then they can say, do you have any questions, or just quickly go through it and then talk a little bit about specific risks. The question was about how do we each deal with quality control for our programs, and I think with ours, with a few different things, we did a lot of shadowing, so we had our HIV counselors who sort of have their own supervision quality control process already implemented. We had them supervise the new staff doing it in the lab and give them advice, and then we would have sort of regular meetings with the Women's Care Center staff and the partnership staff to make sure that things were going well. We also have a few different ways to collect data, and we review that data and see, if the numbers sort of aren't adding up right. Is there anything, my colleagues in the audience, is there anything you guys want to add?
That quality assurance is a very important component of our program as well. And as I mentioned, there are trained supervisors, many of whom are OBGYNs, who visit the providers regularly after training and, as time goes on, less regularly when they feel that they're competent. What they do is a co-assessment where the provider basically diagnoses the cervix, and then the supervisor can then see if there's a discrepancy. And there are some learning tools, such as there are flashcards. We have a set of flashcards with pictures of various cervices, and those can be used to refresh the providers and to test their skills. And the same is for the cryotherapy service is offered less frequently because fewer women are VIA positive. So that's performed with the supervisor until the supervisor feels the provider is competent. And then we do something similar by looking at the percentage VIA positive rates, and if there are any outliers, then special attention is given to that site.
Well, I mean, when I spoke about the on-the-job training and the district team's role, district team is made of people who are obstetrics and gynecology and child care specialists, both in nursing professions and in the medical profession, and the part of their job descriptions is to perform, monitoring visits and coach the people to make sure that they are performing according to the standards. And we have an established integrated healthcare standards for maternal and child health and family planning.
Sure.
I actually didn't want to talk anything about quality. Quality in Ethiopia is very difficult and not very long-lasting. So we have been working a lot with health service providers, but the moment the project's finishing, that was our experience every time. That's always the criticism of our final evaluators. The moment we move out, it's finished. But I found it very interesting to hear that there is a tendency that the pretest counseling in BCT is going down in facilities, because that was what happening when I was in Tanzania, that actually the moment the BCT was integrated to become a routine procedure in the health delivery, and in that case we implemented PMTCT, it was cut down to 2 to 3 minutes, and then the concentration was on people who tested HIV positive. And I find it actually interesting that it's not just kind of a third world adaptation of needs and resources, but obviously in developed countries there is the same outcome of change in implementing.
I actually think about it, but I have a question.
about 5 months old, so we haven't looked at that yet, but thank you for the idea.
Again, because of the totality of the thing, the clinic teams are charged with developing results-oriented 3 months or quarterly plans. And in these results, they put up their indicators on how many people were supposed to be receiving family planning services, how many people they're supposed to be receiving vaccinations, and things like that. And they compare themselves with other clinics that are available in the same district. So that's partially, keeps looking at what they are doing. And at the same time, they use what are the challenges that are emerging in the society or in the community as they speak and interact and see what are the areas that they need to focus on. Maybe within this quarter, they will focus more on treating anemia among the population, among the community. And in the next 3 quarters, they will focus more on family planning. But their focus is maintained through their results, and these results are compared among facilities and among the national average.
I have recently been confronted on and off with this question of effectivity and service integration, and I have a big problem there because, okay, one thing is for me, it's not in Ethiopia, what we implement at the grassroots level, there's never a question of to compare it with anything without. We're just doing both at the same time. And it's coming up because we are doing a lot of vertical programs, but then there's a USID request at the moment, tell me what's the advantage and whatsoever. I think it's all a bit short-sighted. Of course, on one side, we're sitting there and say, oh, but it makes sense, and then what is becoming better? And in Ethiopia, the staff turnover is so high. The people at the health facility are so few that if they are moving, we just retrain them. You know, we train them on VCT, we train them on long-term contraception. We just do what we have we just have no choice. We don't have specialized counselors. But I think short-sighted in the sense of we had a lot of literature of integrated services before 1990, and just because it's not online and we can't access it, we kind of have forgotten it. But there's a lot of literature in the 80s which actually show that services have been integrated and they make sense. So the question is kind of, we are reinventing the wheel because we don't access old paper literature. There has been a lot of data and at that time as well saying it makes sense to have integrated services.